Line, Willie D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. Day 3 of SEC Media Days. We're live out here at the Grand Hyatt in downtown Nashville. Our SEC Media Days coverage is brought to you by Volunteer Hose and Gasket in Mercedes-Benz of Music City. It's a Wednesday at noon, so it's Hutton o'clock. Hutton, always appreciate our time with you.
My favorite 30 minutes right here smack dab in the middle of the week. Great to be on and great to join you live here at the, what is it, Grand Hyatt.
Grand Hyatt.
Is where
some people
are.
Might say this is everyone's favorite 30 minutes of
is
the
Willie
week.
At the Ritz-Carlton? I'm looking at the YouTube stream right now. And he has the same backdrop, so I'm assuming it's the same type of hotel, which means it's very expensive. Which I would expect from Willie Donning.
He does look awfully camouflaged.
Yeah, isn't this weird that usually it's Hutton on the Zoom talking to us in the studio. I'm on the Zoom now talking to Hutton. But, yeah, I'm at a residence today. I'm in the home office of my buddy Bruce Elder, co-captain 1993 Vanderbilt Commodore Championship basketball team. But he was nice enough
to
let me use the office today. So, yeah, I'm in the high end. But I'm just not in a high-end hotel.
He's in a gated community is what I hear.
Exactly. Right, exactly. Well, Hutton, DeAndre Hopkins is officially a Titan. What did you make of the deal? What did you make of the term, the money? What did you make of the fit?
I think it's a team-friendly contract, honestly. I mean, it feels like they were negotiating against themselves. They gave $3 million in incentives that apparently, according to those covering the Patriots, Patriots wanted to match certain terms of the money, but they wanted more of the incentives than what the Titans were giving the money up front. I don't mind it. I'm also just straight up, I'm hesitant to be all in on what this team becomes with him. They needed him in that wide receiver core. Mace, I know you're thinking about who they were versus what they became too. Mm-hmm. And we chatted about this a couple of weeks ago, but depth-wise, they needed a proven guy, a playmaker, a guy that just scores touchdowns. And this team doesn't have many of those. And they have that guy when he's available. Mm-hmm. I like that. I'm also not sitting here saying, oh, this is, Treylon Burks is going to go off because he's got Hopkins opposite him. There's a lot that happens between now and the start of the season. And it's a slow progression normally, not a fast one. And, I mean, all that to say, Caroline, I like it. I'm not jumping in saying I love it yet because this team doesn't have a great history, regardless of coach or general manager, of bringing guys in and having them actually produce to the level that they were paid to do. And also from Hopkins' point of view, for me, is I need to know how motivated he is. Mm-hmm. Is he pissed off that his market value was what it was versus what I'm sure he thought he was going to get either via trade or visit-wise? Or is this more like a Randy Moss or, a guy that's coming in for another paycheck, and which I'm totally fine with?
Yeah.
He's reached that level where he's going to get paid before he's not in the league. I don't know where he is in that because, quite frankly, the NFL's telling us he's got to prove it again before they're going to pay him the way that the Cardinals just paid him. I'm very intrigued with the dynamic of the locker room and the organization who, once again, it looks like they're planning for the future while trying to win now.
So you say you're not all in, and that's fair. That's really fair. Jonathan,
I'm in on the idea, the concept.
Okay.
But and I don't blame them one bit for signing him. I'm just not saying, I don't think they're above Jacksonville with the move. I think they're with Jacksonville. I think there's a lot of people that are saying, oh, Titans are, again, the favorite of the division. I'm not there yet.
Has the DeAndre Hopkins signing bridged the gap between Titans and
no doubt. Again, they're neck and neck. Mm-hmm. They were an organization that looked like they'd take that back to Jacksonville, mm-hmm. regardless of Jacksonville's late run and how that game ended up with the last game of the season. It just didn't feel the same. The momentum had really shifted towards Florida, right? Now I think you give some hope and momentum back in, a little boost in the passing game. But this still comes down to, can they protect Ryan Tannehill or not?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of questions there just based on you know, factors of last year with injuries and guys going down, guys getting moved around, guys not panning out with who they brought in. Who's to, I have no idea if a backup from Philly comes in and starts the same way Dennis Kelly was a hit. Or the, what does the suspension early in the season with Nicholas Petit-Frere do to the core of that group that they have in mind that was healthy?
In the toughest stretch of the season.
It's all a – they've got to protect their quarterback if they want the wide receivers to actually put up some numbers.
Yeah, you're right. This move to me, even though I do like it, Hutt, from the standpoint of – because they needed him. This was the situation, I believe, that had Hopkins gone – it didn't even have to be New England. But if Hopkins had gone to another team, I think you wouldn't have been able to hear the last of it here in Nashville. Because everybody would point back to A.J. Brown. You let him get away. You had an opportunity to get another receiver. For whatever reason, you didn't pay him the money to get him. Now, how he performs this season, I don't know. I think the biggest question for me with him is how does he adapt,
you
know, to being possibly the number two? Because as good as D-Hop has been in his career, and I've said this over and over again, when it comes to catching a football, I haven't seen anyone like him.
I agree with
since,
you.
Larry Fitzgerald and Chris Carter, as far as just catching a football.
Amazing radius.
Exactly. But how did he come into an offense where he could potentially not be the number one, for one, but he's not getting the targets that he's used? He's a high-volume guy. Even last year, he was a high-volume guy. People look at it, well, he had 65 catches, 9 games, 700 yards. Well, hell, they threw to him almost 100 times. So he's a high-volume. Now, how do you come and not be a high-volume guy? How do you adapt to that?
Well, here's the truth, though. They are going to be at their pinnacle, at their best, if Treylon Burks
exactly.
is the number one.
And that's what I believe.
And here's the other thing. No one was trying to sign him to be a number two anywhere else either. That's the crazy. The market, like, there are no other teams mentioned for the deal he just received. And maybe Kansas City would have gotten in if they have Jones restructured and it frees up some salary cap space. But, again, like, the number of teams that have been reported – with an offer, too. And he had his pick on, oh, you can be a number one. You can also just play. You can play now instead of waiting for later. I like the fact that he went ahead and signed now. And it's crucial now because Tannehill's coming off of the ankle surgery. Everything looks great with Burks based on those that have been laying eyes on him. Now they've got to get acclimated as a unit, as a passing group. And then how much does Chigakonkwo factor in to this mix too, and how they can run their offense. He's primarily an outside receiver. I know he ran more inside a bit last year. I think that's where he got the most of his numbers. I'm saying snap counts were higher inside than they had been throughout his career. But he's the outside guy, and you can move Burks around and make him the puzzle piece and the number one. Feed Treylon Burks. I want the ball in his hands, and you can use Hopkins to your advantage there. But this cannot be the Julio Jones experiment. Mm-hmm. Not from Julio's stance. Mm-hmm. They had Julio Jones on the sideline on like 3rd and 13 with a group of a package group. I'm thinking, why trade for him if you're not going to have him on the field on the money downs where you need to move the chains?
Right.
They've got to also treat Hopkins that way. They can't just ignore the fact, the analytics are telling us to put so-and-so in here. No. Hopkins is on the field with Burks, and, you know, this can't be some package thing. And I don't think it will be. It can't be.
Well, I don't think they deviate from what they do. And I don't know if Hopkins' team actually looked at what the Titans do as far as personnel. Because if they did, they would know, even with –
well,
A.J. Brown,
but he
they
does
still
know.
Were moving him in but, and out with personnel.
Yeah, but on the moment uh-huh. opportunities, A.J.'s on the field,
yeah.
right?
Uh-huh.
Same thing. He certainly knows Tim Kelly, mm-hmm. and he trusts Mike Vrabel. He knows Bill O'Brien. Mm-hmm. Belichick's always been a massive fan of DeAndre Hopkins and the mic'd up sets on NFL films
right.
when they're interacting and when they're game planning against the Texans back in the day. So I think the teams that were involved, he also knew conceptually what it would look like. And he also put up big numbers in an offense that was similar to that when Kelly was there in Houston.
But he was the number one guy. Now,
if he
is the number one guy in this offense, well, let me rephrase.
He's instantly the most productive pass catcher they have now.
If Treylon Burks isn't the number one guy, is there a problem
with
this offense?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because Treylon Burks is also living up to expectations, too, or not in this scenario.
Exactly.
But look, this gives them an opportunity to have Treylon Burks be the number one guy. Because right now, if they didn't have Hopkins, who else are you worried about in that passing game? And you may not even be worried about Burks, but he's the focus of how you would defend the passing game against the Tennessee Titans on third and, let's be honest, it would be third and 10-plus based on what we saw last year.
More with Jonathan Hutton coming up next. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace is brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. Live out here at SEC Media Days at the Grand Hyatt in downtown Nashville. Jonathan Hutton is with us now.
Okay, Hutt, so you've been at the SEC Media Days these last few days through the ranks here. I feel like we're lacking that huge, juicy topic that we're all just rallying around here. But let me get your thoughts, because Tennessee hasn't gone yet. I'm sure this will come up a lot when they do. But just your thoughts, as now we've had a few days to sort of digest the final ruling from the NCAA on the sanctions.
The sanctions, so I spoke with Greg Sankey earlier this morning, Willie, and that topic came up just from the length, 3 years and all of the different reports, and you wrap up your internal investigation, you self-impose things, and then you sit around and wait. I think that is the next hurdle, is what takes so long in this? I think that's the topic with it. I don't believe in punishing players that had nothing to do with an issue that was prior to their arrival anywhere close to on campus. You know, Heupel has had to deal with the self-imposed scholarship reductions and things when he first took over. Unlike Pruitt, he was actually winning with the talent that he had and looked vastly different with Heupel than Jeremy Pruitt. The $8 million fine is fascinating. Because that to me, the highest that we've seen. I don't blame the NCAA for coming down with that penalty, because they also want to set a precedent. But at the same time, it's leadership. It's a penalty imposed by a governing body that I don't know when they don't have power. It's a bizarre time in college athletics. And they get to pick and choose when they want to, you know, be heavy-handed or not. And I think in large part, it's just this is their lane where they can be heavy-handed, and in other places they can't. And the fine was certainly showing that and indicative of that. And the other really interesting piece that I was reading, I believe Adam Spartz put out the list, and anyone could see it based on text exchange and emails, but Fulmer's list of everyone that he would consider or would like to have considered if Pruitt had to get the axe. I mean, it was a long list, and it's a list of coaches that are walking these halls this week here in Nashville.
Such as? So name a couple.
Well, he would – these were more notes. He had a lot of typos in it, so I think it's more of like a iPhone note that he forwarded to one of his assistants, who was then going to write up something that he would approve. But Shane Beamer was listed. Eli Drinkwitz was listed. They looked at a couple of other young guys. He mentioned Healy as a energetic and promising young coach, I believe, was the in parentheses there.
Joe Brady was on that list.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it was almost like a live brainstorm that you got to see.
Yeah. But and it's a great example too, isn't it, Hutt, that your stock, just take that list, right? In that moment, a lot of those guys really did have a lot of momentum. And now, just fast forward just a couple years later, it's not the same for some of those guys. The stock has risen and fallen for a bunch of those guys.
No doubt. And it's also interesting, you know, once Fulmer, steps aside, retires, And he didn't. He also said that he didn't agree with firing Pruitt in that same note. But then here's kind of a brainstorm assessment of where he would like to go with the hire, if in fact it had to happen. I think it's also important to look at where Tennessee ended up, and the fact that they end up hiring Heupel from the same university where the AD is hired to replace Fulmer, and it was almost deemed as this is the last resort because of the situation. And it ends up being the best possible of the coaches on that list at the time when Fulmer would have been pulling the trigger and hiring someone. So, again, I go back to, you know, in the moment, in reaction to the moment, you don't really realize what something can be based on who or who doesn't know who's doing the hiring, the firing, and the situation that they're inheriting. I love the coaches that don't make excuses, and Heupel didn't. We haven't seen that from him.
I think based on all those notes, I think every Tennessee fan is pretty happy with where it's gone since then, as opposed
yes.
to the leadership of Philip Fulmer as an athletic director as opposed to a football coach. But
yes.
let me throw this at you, Hutt. I read a very interesting article on the Tennessee story by Pat Forty, who's been at the SEC Media Days this week as well. And he was basically saying, look, this is the end of an era. There was no postseason ban for Tennessee. And when you take a look forward, it's hard to imagine that a team could cheat to a point where you would get a postseason ban just because the rules have been loosened up so much. Like, what could you do that could get you knocked out of a postseason? So those days
yeah.
might be – like, Tennessee could have been the last one. That was maybe the last shot. That was his argument anyway. What do you think?
I guess so. I mean, I'm thinking of what we've seen recently. You know, I'm thinking of Les Miles. You know, Les Miles had wins taken away. So the postseason ban, quote unquote, was they took away these wins from the last couple of years from Tennessee in the bowls, which means nothing. Those games happened. We saw the results. They made the money. The players got the experience. You know, all of that. And you're telling me Les Miles would not. He would not want to trade wins for a national title. Of course he would.
Right.
They did, you know, at LSU. So I'm yeah. I mean, it's a governing body that I don't really know what type of power they wield, and I think the most powerful dude right now in college athletics is Greg Sankey, because everyone kind of follows the mantra and the tone of whatever he's trying to set on that Monday address, which I didn't find very I didn't find very good for where we're headed in NIL, mm-hmm. Because I don't think it didn't come across as very positive or optimistic that anything's going to happen anytime soon in terms of regulation, either state by state, conference by conference, or what he was trying to push was federal legislation and having Congress do it.
Yeah, that's another thing that I wanted to touch on with you.
And by the way, they're pointing to people who don't really they're in government. They're pointing to people to make up rules and regulations for Nick Saban, who's asking, just show me the rule book. I want to follow have everyone follow the same rules. Nick Saban and Greg Sankey are looking at people that don't know anything about what they're trying to regulate and come up with rules for.
And they don't care.
They don't care.
But aside from that, like, why would you? Greg Sankey could get with Tony Petitti, mm-hmm. With the Big Ten. He's got to have a better relationship with him than he did with Kevin Warren. And they can come up with their own rules to follow if they really want to. And they actually have contact with all these coaches, the administrator, the ADs, the collectives. There's a lot of people that are just grandstanding in order to sway one side instead of the other. And I think that's where we are. And I think Sankey was alluding to that on Monday.
Well, they want Congress to do the dirty work. They want Congress to do their dirty work.
Well, but I think everyone's using everyone in that to mm-hmm. stay in the status quo. Mm-hmm. And I didn't find it very optimistic that what he was saying last year, that they didn't make much progress, even though I think they're about to present a bill soon to across Congress. I mean, we've seen that before, too. I think it's just a slow, slow process that if we're talking about this as much as we are and you want change with the system, there has to be someone first and foremost, they need to find out who's going to lead that charge. And I don't.
Is it Sankey?
Well, it could be. It absolutely can be. Mm-hmm. But I don't think pointing things to Capitol Hill is automatically some big solution when you're going to wait, you know, 3-4 years through an entire election cycle instead of just banding together and making college football whatever you think it should be at the very top and letting everything else be governed a different way. That's just the where we are, and I don't think we're close to either option currently.
Why do you think they don't do that?
I mean, multiple reasons come to mind. I mean, first, the presidents and the universities, the board of directors don't want it because they like the money they're raking in now. They don't want the players to be employees or independent contractors. Mm-hmm. They don't want a union. We're going to get that anyway.
Yeah.
And I think also the TV money that and the contracts that have just been signed play a factor into all of it too, because you're trying to make everybody happy, which you're not going to be able to please everyone in this. And and while that goes on, again, I'm just reading between the lines, why that goes on, you're complaining, you're like the big-time college football is complaining about where we're headed in the player space, and no one's really doing anything to regulate it except talk about regulation without having a plan mapped out, because the those that will be coming up with those rules don't really know the space that they're about to jump into and regulate. And it's got to be someone that steps up and grabs the brass ring that Vince McMahon talks about in WWF. That could be Greg Sankey in a snap.
WWE. For the
worldwide
wrestling
World Wildlife Foundation.
Worldwide wrestling. Everybody wants change, but nobody knows how to do it, and that's kind of the sticky middle.
But I asked Sankey about this morning, Caroline, and he halfway agreed, you know, and I also complained to him about wanting to expand the NCAA tournament. I'm not in on that.
Oh, I'm not in on that.
Well,
we're
it's
good.
Coming.
We don't need to expand. We're good. We're good where we are. Hutton, appreciate you for stopping by.
Always a great chat with you guys. Willie, keep rocking and rolling there in the double-gated community, and look forward to seeing you guys around.
I'll be back.
We'll talk to you next week.
If all goes well, I'll be back tomorrow with you guys among the ranks.
Hate to do this, but I got to run.
We'll react to what Hutton had to say coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
They're pointing to people who don't really they're pointing to people to make up rules and regulations for Nick Saban, who's asking, just show me the rule book. I want to follow have everyone follow the same rules. Nick Saban and Greg Sankey are looking at people that don't know anything what they're trying to regulate and come up with rules for.
And they don't care.
They don't care.
But aside from that, like, why would you? Greg Sankey could get with Tony Petitti, with the Big Ten. He's got to have a better relationship with him than he did with Kevin Warren. And they can come up with their own rules to follow if they really want to. And they actually have contact with all these coaches, the administrator, the ADs, the collectives. There's a lot of people that are just grandstanding in order to sway one side instead of the other. And I think that's where we are. And I think Sankey was alluding to that on Monday.
Well, they want Congress to do the dirty work.
Jonathan Hutton joining us this past segment, as he does every Wednesday at noon. Appreciate him, as always, for joining us. And I think that this year, it's different than what we normally hear at an SEC Media Days, right? There's always that one hot button issue, that one hot button question. But really, and it's not as sexy as, you know, a lawsuit or, who's the third best team in the SEC. But I personally do think that the most pressing and important question or topic to be talked about this week is the topic of federal involvement in NIL. And it seems like it's headed down a very, very scary slope, that if you don't do anything, then that's scary, that we're currently living in the wild, wild west of NIL. Mm-hmm. But if you do get Congress involved, then you open yourself up to unionization in college sports. Then you open yourself up to players eventually becoming employees of the university. And maybe you don't think that's scary, but I just think that's a completely different college football that we don't want to be part of.
Yeah, I believe people love college football so much because they believe it's sort of like that purity still left. Like, why do we like high school football? Because it's that purity.
Right.
Kids are playing because they enjoy it. Mm-hmm. They love it. The money's not there, even though it's there now with NIL. But the premise is, because it's just pure, guys and girls want to play sports because they love it.
And I have no problem with players getting paid.
Exactly.
I
don't either. But then you go up to the college ranks, and it's still, people love that pure sort of purity of, guys and girls playing because they enjoy it. It's not a business.
And even though they do get paid, these past couple of years in the NIL world, it's not like that's impacted my viewing on a Saturday afternoon at 2:30 on CBS. It still feels like the same college football. Players are just getting their fair share of the pie, and I'm good with that.
But then if indeed it turns into something, a unionization or Congress, you know, gets involved in all this other stuff, then it becomes professional sports. And then it becomes, you know, the minute a student athlete, I don't care, men's, women's, it doesn't matter, start complaining, people are going to say, they get paid anyway, why y'all complaining? Half of the majority of the world aren't getting the advantages that y'all are getting at these universities, and y'all are getting paid, why are y'all complaining? I don't want it to become that.
Yeah.
I want it to be a professional world, which is NFL, NBA, and all that other stuff, and then a college world, which it is now. I don't want to see it become more of a professional atmosphere, in a sense.
I'm with you.
Now, they get these universities are getting paid like big corporations.
Right.
But it still has not, even with NIL, like you said, even with NIL, it still hasn't, you know, penetrated the sport to a point where we look at it different. Mm-hmm. We sort of take the purity out of it. It's still in the game. And I think that's why so many people love it, because college football is just so much different from the NFL. Mm-hmm.
And it's always inherently going to have that difference.
Exactly.
I always remember a conversation we had with the great Bob Ryan years ago. He pointed this out to me. I mean, I guess we all sort of knew it. But, you know, our country is so different than the rest of the world on how they develop their athletes when you get down to it. If you grew up playing soccer in England or hockey in Sweden, you know, you're much more likely to get into a club format where you're not playing for your school. You know, that's sort of a form. That's how we choose to do it. It's a fun thing. You're rooting for your school. You're rooting for a pride. You know, you're playing for your high school. There's a certain amount of honor that goes with that. But as we know, it's not a perfect system, but this is how he used to say, Bob Ryan did, this is how we choose to do it, right? So we're taking, you know, the difficulties, the corruption, the exploitation that goes with that. But I'm with you guys. I still think that there is a lot of admirable parts to the way we do it in our country, and it is in jeopardy of changing a lot if NIL takes over the highest level and it continues to evolve. So I do think we got to be careful with that, because I still think one of the best things about the college environment is these guys, the men and women that are playing are still kids in a lot of ways. It's a developmental stage. You're still maturing. You shouldn't be considered a professional. And I know people are going to say, well, 18-year-olds are top tennis players and 18-year-olds can jump into the NHL. I get that. But it's a very, very small amount of people that do that, and it's fraught with danger, right? Think of the Dwight Goodens and people that come up, and they're talented enough to be professionals at 18, 19. But there's a lot of pitfalls that go with that, and there's a lot to be said about the college environment where you can screw up a little bit. You know, you can be a kid while you're developing and maturing and preparing yourself for the later part of life.
And correct me if y'all think any differently, but I think it's a pretty scary or harrowing realization when Greg Sankey, who Hutton called arguably the most powerful man in college sports, and that's a very fair point. I think that you can make a very fair argument for that. When he says the only way to fix these NIL, he calls them issues, is Congress getting involved. And here we all three are saying, yeah, we don't think Congress wants to get involved. That's a pretty scary place in college sports.
Yeah, I used to laugh. Derek, you've said that, like, when Hutton said what he said, I hearken back to some times in the past. I can think of a couple for baseball when the steroids were happening, right? And then there was the whole thing with Roger Clemens and the Mitchell report. But though there's some almost comical times where Congress is asking questions of baseball players or other sports people, and it just becomes very obvious that some of the Congress people are different levels of interest in sports, but you get some questions like, what is an RBI or something like that? You know, something crazy where the sports fan is sitting there laughing and going, what is going on? Why are the Congress people in this if they don't know what's going on? But that is a challenge, right? A congressperson can't know everything about everything. And arguably, if it's your job to follow the sports world, you're going to have a lot easier time knowing what the issues are than if you're doing what an entire, you know, what a congressperson is supposed to be doing, which is not pay attention to the sports page every day.
No, I mean, to me, Congress has a job to help facilitate things that goes on in the country.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't one of those things, I believe. Mm-hmm. This is a situation where the NCAA governing body took their sweet time and didn't address the problems when they had an opportunity to address it. So now that the horses are out of the barn and you don't have enough manpower to get them all back in, you want to call basically the National Guard. Hey, come and help us with this problem because we can't. Even though we knew it was coming, even though we could have did something, we chose not to and we let the horses out. Now we need the National Guard to come and reel them by. I know there are things going over in another country and we may be at war and these people may have to get shipped, you know, relocated out. But we need y'all to help us with our minute thing, our small thing. It's big to us, but it's small to the country. Government, Congress, in this situation, they don't need to touch it. This is why? Because the NCAA doesn't want to seem like the bad person now? Well, had you addressed this a long time ago and work with these student athletes and not be so damn greedy, because that's all it was about, greed.
Mm-hmm.
Not being greedy, you wouldn't be in a situation that you're in now. Now you're asking Congress to fix it. The hell with that. You fix it yourself.
Kevin Texan says Congress can't do anything about it, period. If they do, the Supreme Court will stamp that out. Congress can do something about it. Congress does not want to get involved with it. And with the Supreme Court ruling, you know, you said you can't put a cap on the amount of money that college players can make. There are other things that Congress can do that Greg Sankey and other leaders in college sports are asking Congress to do. But I'm with you. Congress doesn't want to get involved. It's college football. Congress has got bigger things.
Yeah.
Bigger
it's Sankey, Sankey and those people going to them. It's not the other. It's not the government trying to get involved, right? It is Greg Sankey spearheading a group of people asking for Congress's help. That's an interesting twist.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll continue to get your thoughts on that. But coming up next, I just started watching Quarterback on Netflix, and I have some thoughts. We'll get into that coming up next. Hey, tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball tonight at 6:35 p.m. on 94.9 The Fan. The Sounds take on the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp, AAA affiliate of the Miami Marlins, by 312 Pizza Company, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Family Leisure. 1025-1063, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace. Hey, 1025 and 1063, The Game has your chance to win tickets to Misfits Boxing X Series 008 boxing matches at the National Municipal Auditorium this Saturday. Awfully lengthy little title for this boxing match. Text in keyword boxing, B-O-X-I-N-G, to the game text line at 615-737-1025 now to enter. So I finally did it.
Uh-huh.
I made the venture. I started watching Quarterback on Netflix last night. Have either of y'all seen it?
I have not ventured. I've seen it, and I've wanted to click on it, but I'm like, I don't want to. Who want to see Mariota and
Kirk
Baker
Cousins?
Mayfield? Well, I need to watch it now because Kirk Cousins is on there, so
you
I need to watch.
Big Kirk Cousins guy?
He's a wow, Willie
Green. Go
Willie,
Green.
Did she just say that? Good Lord.
It caught me off guard because never have I ever heard anyone say, oh, Kirk Cousins is on it? I have to watch it.
It's a must watch now.
It's okay.
Uh-huh.
I saw on Twitter, oh my gosh, this is the greatest thing I've ever watched. Thank you to Netflix for gracing my presence with this. I thought it was okay.
Now, what is the what is it just a behind the scenes look at what they go through practice before a game and stuff like that?
Basically. Okay. So it's Marcus Mariota, Patrick Mahomes, and Kirk Cousins. Mm-hmm. And it stitches all three of their lives. And I do like the idea that it was three completely different quarterbacks mm-hmm. in three totally different situations. You know, Patrick Mahomes riding the highest of highs, Marcus Mariota trying to break his way back into a starting position, mm-hmm. and Kirk Cousins kind of being that veteran that's kind of in the middle. So I like that they did that. It shows three very different perspectives. I think the production value is really good. You know, they gather a ton of game footage, a ton of footage from the Colin Cowherd national radio broadcast, which adds a lot more kind of behind-the-scenes look and a whole lot more perspective of where each of those individual quarterbacks were at that time. So the production value is good. The story itself, it's fine. You know, it follows three quarterbacks at practice leading up to games, their reaction to the games. I found myself going on my phone in the middle of it because it wasn't very intriguing.
Yeah. So does it give it behind right the scenes? Does it give it behind the scenes of like the family, like family life and stuff like that?
Yeah, you see like their family life, they have footage from practice, like there's footage from like Patrick Mahomes' birthday party and like Kirk Cousins at his house. I will say, though, Kirk Cousins is so much more likable to me now.
Oh, okay.
He's so humble. Uh-huh. There was a scene where he burned a hole in his hoodie, mm-hmm. and he was so upset about it. I'm like, Kirk, it's an Adidas black hoodie. You can buy another one. Mm-hmm. You're a multimillionaire, brother. You can buy another one.
Hey, that probably was his favorite one.
Maybe it was, so who am I to say? But, and you know, his wife was talking about their life, and they live in like a beautiful but very humble home, and they have a very humble life. So it made me appreciate him and like him so much more than I did. Not that I had any reason to not like him. I just, you know, he's just Kirk Cousins.
Exactly.
But it's fine. Like, I don't think I'd recommend it, honestly.
Mm. Nick, Caroline, you didn't love it either? I mean, it was okay. I wouldn't say
okay.
It wasn't great. I mean, it was pretty good. Don't get me wrong. It was good, but the thing I liked most about it was the Mariota cut scenes of his diet and his struggle with Atlanta and kind of finding the game passion of the game again. I thought that was pretty neat coming from a Titans fan perspective. Kirk Cousins, big Kirk Cousins advocate after watching that. And then, I don't know, I was going to ask you about the storylines. Did you like for them jumping from storyline to storyline or just stay if they should have just gone with just one per episode?
It was a little jarring because it jumps very suddenly from the Kirk Cousins story to the Patrick Mahomes story to the Mariota story. But I also think in terms of a timeline, that makes the most sense because they go throughout the season.
Okay.
And they like week one, week two, week three, and like what each quarterback was doing in that certain time. So I don't think that it would have made sense to go through all of Patrick Mahomes in this past season and all of Mariota in this past season. But it was a little bit jarring the way that they jump so suddenly from one quarterback to another.
So is it more than just one series? Is it like multiple episodes?
It's like an 8-episode season, and it was just renewed for season 2.
Okay.
Hmm. One thing that strikes me with things like this is when Hard Knocks first came out, it was a relatively new genre. But think about where it's gone since then with all sports trying to sort of tap in to that. You know, sometimes Hard Knocks can get a little old. It's the same themes every year. We still love it because we're hungry for the next football season, and it still works to a degree, but it takes something kind of special to really jump at you. And with all these other production companies that now are jumping in, I think about the Predators thing that NHL Network did when the team went to Prague. You know, that was cool. So if it's your team, you're extra intrigued. But if you're trying to get the masses, you really have to have a good angle. It's got to be really well done, or else you get the reaction you have, Caroline. It's kind of like, meh, I've seen this before. Nothing big.
But
think about how many
of
these things we have now, as opposed to when Hard Knocks was the thing, right? You were like, oh, my gosh, they have this behind the scenes. This is pretty cool. Now it's just kind of old hat. So what's the next
thing? Revolutionary almost. But I feel like even with Hard Knocks, it's kind of lost its luster a bit, at least to me. Because I feel like so many coaches and programs and even players now, they don't want to be part of it. At least
there's awareness now that players have that maybe they didn't have when Hard Knocks first came on the scene. So maybe you did get a little bit more natural stuff. Now I think there's a sense by all the athletes when something like this is going on, you kind of know the drill. So you know sort of how to stay out of the pitfalls. You kind of have a vision of, hey, this might be on TV. How is this going to look if I say this or that or I do this or do that?
And I think that the more and more time over time, the more the things that people had on Hard Knocks gets nitpicked, that they're so much more cautious. And that's not fun to watch whenever a player or a coach is actively not trying to give you anything juicy. And I do think that it's that I'm speaking from a place of privilege that I do get to go to training camps. And I do get to see a little bit more behind the scenes than maybe an average fan who is not in this business does. But to me, it was just and it was better since those were voluntary involvements with quarterback versus with Hard Knocks. I mean, they're pulling teeth trying to get Hard Knocks, trying to get a team to be involved with Hard Knocks. So it was better with voluntary involvement in the quarterback documentary. But, yeah, it's okay.
I think players are more inclined to allow you to get behind the scenes rather than a coach.
Yeah.
You know, coaches want to keep that curtain closed.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to give you no visual of what's going on behind the scenes. Players are more open because why? It's their brand, and they want to put their brand out there. So I'm pretty sure they didn't have to twist Kirk Cousins, Mahomes, and Mariota's arm to get on this.
Yeah, probably not. And it is good FaceTime for them. And
exactly.
It's interesting behind the scenes to see what their lives are like on a day-to-day basis. That we don't get. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Coming up next, Hutton said something earlier, and it was something that's been reiterated on Twitter, on social media, from Titans fans and non-Titans fans alike. But Mike Vrabel has said, don't you worry about it. And we will explain coming up next. Caroline Willie-DeMace, 1025-1063, The Game.